baseline right there. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, making today make sense as best we can.
Hi, Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. It is Monday, also known as What Did We Miss Monday, where we get a not at all comprehensive list of stories you might have missed over the weekend, because at the velocity that things are flinging right now, we could be here all day and all night if we tried that. Just a carefully curated list of stories you may have missed. Over the weekend,
right. That strike our mutual fancy, I think, is the name of the game, right?
Yes,
exactly. That's the bar.
Yeah, we have a whole new format, an agreed upon news story, couple of headlines that we try not to talk too much about, and it make me smile. But before all of that, oh my gosh!
Holy cow! You guys did it.
Unbelievable!
All that asking and pleading and begging and flacking that we did in the last 10 days. All y'all answered the bell. $354,000 in 10 days this audience raised from 3,000 listeners, more than 3,000 listeners. And the special bonus statistic of the day, 1,210 pair of banana pants. That's a lot of yellow, you guys. That's just a lot of yellow.
That is so much yellow. The willingness of this audience to rock those pants for our sake is so touching and so profound. And yes, I did finally on Friday throw mine in the wash after I wore them almost every single day for a week.
That's pretty funny.
I think you're going to enjoy them. But seriously, if you are keeping score, that is over $150,000 more than our $250,000 goal. And so thank you. I mean, really, primarily, honestly, the strength of the Make Me Smart audience. So we could not be more grateful. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
For real.
So great.
Yeah.
I know. And now you don't have to hear about it anymore. Even better.
That's right. Until Stephanie Ball Patterson drive. Comes and says, guess what?
Over.
Guess what?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We'll be back in is it the winter or the spring? Yeah. I'm not even sure when the drives happen anymore. But there will be more. But right now you are off the hook and you are incredible. Please send us, you know what? Send us pictures of your banana pants when they start to roll in. We would love to see that. We should
that'd be funny.
Instagram gallery.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. All right.
Okay.
Shall we then? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so delighted to see this link in here about the Evergrande blow up.
How could you not? Right?
That broke the stock market today, because I must have texted like 10 people saying, I don't understand why this is such a big deal for the U.S. stocks.
Yeah.
Help.
So the really interesting part of this story, and it's actually not the today ramification. So Evergrande is a Chinese real estate company, got loaded down with it yet. Chinese real estate is really volatile. Its positions got exposed and bad things happened overnight and over the weekend in that market. And that contagion affected Europe. It affected American stocks. I mean, the Dow is down 1 8% the S&P 500, 1.7%. But here's why it matters. It matters because not in this instance was Evergrande the Lehman Brothers of the global economy, but the way the Chinese economy is growing and becoming more intertwined, there will become a point where damage done to the system by a Chinese company will mirror the damage done to the system by an American company. Okay. And that's why this is important, because there's lax regulation over there. There's unbelievable amounts of debt. There's corruption. There's this and there's that. And when that day comes that there is a Chinese Lehman Brothers, we're all going to go, wait, what? And that's why this contagion happened, right? Because of uncertainty and not knowing and all of that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to continue to clarify. So there was, it seems like, reasonable concern. So here's this company, this real estate developer, with about $300 billion worth of liabilities, according to Bloomberg, more than any other property developer in the world. And I guess people have been worried about it for a really long time. And then what happened today? The Chinese government essentially called due. Oh, it has a bond coming due, and people are afraid they're not going to be able to pay.
Right.
So I could sort of see why there would be fear about exposure by American financial institutions. Like maybe they were part of that debt. Is that?
Oh, yeah. Almost
the smallest version. Right. OK. So because of global finance, American firms have been exposed to that debt. And if this company totally collapses, then they'll be on the hook for it.
Right.
But then what about the whole entire stock market freaking out? Is it just like that's how nervous everyone is? All the machines went crazy all at once and we're like, whoa, I guess we're selling today.
Well, the market is overvalued, right? Well beyond what the underlying economy actually deserves. And it's been that way for at least a year and a half, certainly since the bottom of the pandemic recession, and arguably longer than that during most of the Trump administration and arguably parts of Obama as well, right? The market's been really overbought is the expression. Investors have been like, hey, American companies are making lots and lots of money. Interest rates are really low, so there's nowhere else to get returns. Let's plow more money into stocks. You plow more money into stocks, stock prices go up, the indexes go up, and it becomes an ever-repeating cycle, right? That's what you call a risk-off environment, right? People are not interested in taking on risk. They just want to pile on money. And now, with this element of uncertainty, everybody's like, oh, my God, it's not all sunshine and light. And this is,
but it is you
a trigger
it's a really interesting point that you make, though, that we have this very U.S.-centric – I mean, I know that that's a broad statement, but we have this very U.S.-centric idea that the, you know, U.S. stock market will be impacted primarily by what U.S. companies do. And you make a really good point that we're now in a situation where we're not the only ones who can break the global economy. China could do it, too.
Right. That's exactly. We've got competition to see who can break the global economy. But look, here's the thing. Stocks go down too, and nobody should take a 1.7 or a 1.8% decline as a sign the apocalypse is upon us, right? Mm-hmm. This market could fall 10% tomorrow and it would still be completely normal. It would still be completely normal. Stocks go down too. And that's what everybody needs to remember.
Yep.
That's
and
where I am.
And there's money on the sidelines, just waiting.
There's so much money on the sidelines
to come in and buy as soon as you know they feel like there's a big sale at the stock store.
So I was off the air today, right? Which means I was not as plugged in as I usually am to CNBC and business Twitter feeds and all of that jazz. But I heard more than one analyst say today, "Oh, hey, it's a buying opportunity, and we could turn around tomorrow, and the major indices could gain back all they lost today and more."
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't surprise me for a second.
Yep, absolutely.
So.
I did watch CNBC all day today. I get kind of,
that's pretty funny.
A perverse thing to say, and I can say it because I'm not close to like retirement, but I get sort of weirdly excited when there's like a big down stock day because it's like, ooh, news.
I
just always find it kind of fascinating. There's energy, exactly.
Yep.
And so I just, I watched it all day long, and there were a couple of guys because, you know, they're all guys. There were several people coming
guys,
and saying buy the dip, and then there were like maybe two who were like, this ain't a dip.
Yeah. That's right, kids.
I mean, yeah.
In a $35,000 35,000 point Dow, 1.7% is not it's not a lot, absolutely speaking, you know? It's just not, especially after the run the markets have had. Yeah.
It is though an interesting flare that we should pay attention to for the future, for sure.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And the lesson here is that we are not the only ones who can break the global economy. Like Molly said. That's it, for sure.
Lucky us. Great t-shirt.
Yeah. all right. What else?
Right.
What do you got?
In the
When We Miss Monday category.
I mean, holy cow. So as if the Facebook files themselves were not tormenting Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg to no end. I mean, now they're out here putting out blog posts that are like, here's what the Wall Street Journal has missed without any evidence of like, well, here's what we actually did instead of the thing that seems to be suggested, which is that we found out that these things were happening and we didn't do anything. As if that week couldn't have been bad enough, the week that was – the Monday now brings a whole new excerpt in New York Magazine from Bloomberg author Max Chafkin's new book about Peter Thiel. Now, if you aren't up on this, just know, I already warned Kai, I'm going to be like so unbearable about the Peter Thiel thing because this guy has been at the center of the Facebook spider web the whole time. He's been on the board. He was a huge investor. He's, you know, from the original PayPal mafia and is now one of the original founders of PayPal around Silicon Valley. They call him the PayPal mafia because they fund so many things. He is now the CEO of Palantir and was a big Trump supporter. You are up to date. The kind of the only Silicon Valley big Trump supporter. This book is bananas and has millions of revelations about the relationship between the Trump administration and Facebook, brokered by Peter Thiel. And one of the revelations in this New York Magazine piece today is that, according to an anonymous source who spoke to Max Chafkin, Peter Thiel, remember that dinner that Mark Zuckerberg had with Trump? Like, we just had dinner. I don't know. Nothing big happened. Well, according to this book, Thiel later told a confidant that, and I'm quoting from Max Chafkin, Zuckerberg came to an understanding with Kushner during the meal, Jared Kushner. Facebook, he promised, would avoid fact-checking political speech, thus allowing the Trump campaign to claim whatever it wanted. In return, the Trump administration would lay off on any heavy-handed regulations. The site would push what the Thiel confidant called, quote, state-sanctioned conservatism.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's just going to roll around all night long.
Yeah.
And be a big, 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 big story by tomorrow.
Yep.
Tech companies also not as good as you think they are. Apple and Google. I mean, you might. Yeah, I know you didn't think Facebook was standing up for democracy, but turns out neither are Apple and Google, which together, after pressure from Moscow, removed an app from their platforms. And YouTube actually went so far as to take down videos from Russia's opposition party headed by Alexei Navalny, who is in prison after almost being murdered, right ahead of Russia's big election, which had the potential to remove Putin's party from power. But now that one assumes, and the opposition was coordinating voting on all these different candidates through these apps that have now been removed under pressure from Moscow. In case you thought only China could get tech companies to do its bidding from afar, turns out Russia can too.
Turns out.
In good news, and this is my last headline before we go to Kai.
Right.
In good news, however, Pfizer released research saying that the COVID-19 vaccine is safe and effective for children 5 to 11 years old. Let's have some approval.
So have
now,
they
please.
Filed for emergency use for those kids? Do we know?
They have.
I don't know.
I know Pfizer has. I don't know if the other companies have.
Okay.
But yeah, let's get her done.
Let's absolutely get her done. All right, I'm going to bang through these in something of a hurry because I like to be respectful of all y'all's time. Great sort of, you know how the New York Times has been doing those scroll down and they will roll videos through and they will do graphics and whiz bang stuff. Really interesting piece in that genre about the Empire State Building in Manhattan and it as a proxy for what's going on with businesses in a lot of cities, New York specifically. And the reason the Empire State Building works is that it's not a place that has a whole lot of really giant multinational companies in it. It's a place that's got a mix of large and small businesses, like small law firms or small accounting firms. And, you know, LinkedIn has 10 floors. So it's a really interesting survey of who's moving in, who's moving out, who's giving up their lease, what they're doing, how they're doing it, half-time or hybrid or what have you. Totally, totally interesting. And I have to tell you, actually, sorry, just parenthetically, it's become clear to me that marketplace will never be the same. It will just never be the same. And I know I said this early on and it's going to be completely different. It's a done deal. Marketplace will never be the same.
Really...
There will never be the production teams in there working full speed. There will never be the broadcast ops guys all in there. It just won't be. And that's a little sad. But this New York Times piece on the Empire State Building was really interesting. Awesome piece on stable coins in the New York Times by Gina Smilek, who's their Fed watcher and also a regular for us on Marketplace on Fridays. Stable coins, of course, are those types of cryptocurrency that are tied to usually the U.S. dollar and are supposed to be stable, except, oh, look out, there could be something going wrong with stable coins. I know you're shocked that crypto could have some loopholes and some challenges. Yeah. Read that one. This one today from the head of the United Nations talking about the Glasgow Climate Summit, high risk of failure, Mr. Gutierrez said. That's not promising. That summit in November, right? Is that summit in November?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Yeah.
It starts October 31st and goes through November 12th. Yes. The COP26.
Yeah. High risk of failure. Speaking of high risk of failure, Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States of America, said in an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal today, Congress, what the bleepity bleep 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 are you doing? Pass a debt limit increase. Stop screwing around. I'm, you know, interpolating her mood, but Professor Yellen, Dr. Yellen, Secretary Yellen is not a woman given to saying that out loud for herself. So I'm interpreting for her because I've interviewed her a couple of times. That's it.
Get your A in gear. Yeah, speaking of high risk of failure.
Yeah, get your A in gear. That's right. Yeah. And look, there's so I don't know if who listening to this podcast heard Marketplace on Friday afternoon, but I asked Catherine Rampell how serious she thinks this debt limit crisis is. And for the first time in like 5 years that I've known her, she actually sounded scared. And Catherine's a very staid, very steady, very analytical, very sober-minded woman. And she actually said, I'm a little bit nervous about this one. And that's really not good at all. So
no.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that is increasingly becoming the tenor. And like, listen to those warnings because yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. I'm going to do the world's fastest make me smile because I noticed that you don't even have one. And we'll just be
super
speedy. I don't
have one. There was nothing that made me smile today. Yeah.
Get out of here. Believe me, friend. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm not even going to wait for the music because we got to go. My80sTV.com. I didn't even know this existed. My friend sent it to me today. It's amazing. It's just like a tube TV on a website, and you can click around and just watch different things that used to be on in the 80s. So you could just relive your glory time. There's also my 2000s TV, 90s, 70s, and 60s on that same website. So if you would like to escape to simpler times, feel free.
Wow.
Feel free. And we totally understand.
Wow, you can see like
commercials
from the 1980s. All right, we're going.
Oh, man. Oh, those are so upsetting, though. Oh, God, the sexism. Good Lord.
All right, we're going. Tomorrow, Tuesday, deep dive, social safety net. What it is, how it came to be, whether it's working, and how it's supposed to be working in an ideal world. And if you want to listen to it, as soon as that episode drops, subscribe to this podcast. That's all you got to do, I'm telling you.
It's true. And by popular request, the social safety net. So thank you for validating our idea that it might make a good show. Yeah. You can, of course, still send us questions if you have them about that topic or any topic, especially with What Do You Want to Know Wednesday coming up. Send us your comments and questions at makemesmart@marketplace.org or call us and leave us a voice message, 508-827-6278 or 508-UB-SMART.
Oh, Juan Carlos Torrado on it.
On it. He's like, leave.
Holy cow. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Marquette Green is on the production team today as well. Today's program was engineered by the aforementioned Juan Carlos Torrado.
Bridget Bodner is our senior producer, and the executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves.
Sorry, I'm answering Bridget's slacks. Got to do
Me
it all.
Me too.
Yeah.
No chit chat right now. Burr, burr, doo, 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 boo.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.